want to kill my mom. I want to kill my dad.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't go that far.
You never seen that video?
I have seen that video. But yeah, Ripley decided earlier this week to pull the wax warmer down. Not directly on herself, thank God. We didn't have to clean wax out of a cat, but...
I wouldn't do it.
It was all over the wall. Like, I took a butter knife and my fingernail and scraped all the hot pecan brownie wax off the wall. It smelled like I finger-fucked Betty Crocker by the end of it. Oh,
my God.
It was not...
That was so spicy.
Yeah, like that.
We had all the kiddies watching us while they're doing it. You're like, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, they're just all like standing around chilling, like watching this happen. I'm like, oh, this fucking turd brown wax doesn't stain the wall.
That's so funny.
It was not great. It was a stressful, tumultuous time.
Yeah, but now you have good smelling hands forever.
No, I wouldn't say forever.
Endeavor.
But for at least like 3 hours.
I think all kitties get a call to the void where they're like, look, why won't you let me kill myself? Why won't you let me stick my paw in the electrical socket? Why won't you...
It's literally like having a fucking toddler.
Yeah.
They can jump vertically and like 7 times their height. It's great.
Well, I have a loft. Like, my house, my whole upstairs is a loft. So there's a big open square from like my whole upstairs, which is my bedroom, and then big open square in the wall. And then the downstairs, and Shakira likes to jump up on the
I've been ledge. In one of those units before, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
And it fucking stresses me out, like real bad, especially when I put clothes up there, because I do all the time. And so I always think of him like jumping up, and he's huge. Like, he's such a fat cat. And I always think he'll jump up, and the clothes will slip, and then there he goes.
He'll land on his feet.
Gee, it's pretty high. It's pretty high.
I know. I've been in there. It's like a 20-foot drop.
How skinny. So skinny.
But yeah, enough about cats falling to their doom. Welcome to Creeps in the Crypt, everybody. As always, I'm Eric, and I'm joined by...
Christian.
And Bailey.
So we are here to finish up the notes that Sam put out for us for the Texas Killing Fields. So we've got a little bit left. Hopefully we can get a full episode out of this. If we can get a full episode out of it, this will be your only episode this week. If we can't get a full episode out of it, we'll have a bonus episode. But yeah, without further ado, Bailey,
yes,
go ahead.
Okay. So on March 5th, 1996, 13-year-old Crystal Jean Baker was kidnapped while walking from her grandmother's home in Texas City to a corner store to use the payphone to call a friend to come pick her up.
Goddamn payphones, man. If there's one thing I've learned, don't use payphones.
Don't use a payphone in Texas. Because she and her grandmother had gotten into an argument. She had been sexually assaulted and dumped beneath the Trinity River Bridge along I-10 in Chambers County. It remained unsolved until 2010, when a 46-year-old man named Kevin Edison Smith's DNA was entered into the national database after he was arrested on a drug charge in Louisiana. Chambers County Sheriff's Office took Crystal's dress that she was found in from evidence and resubmitted it for analysis. The new technology detected a semen stain that gave a DNA sample that matched another sample that Kevin had submitted after the arrest in Louisiana.
So that can... All right. So what confuses me a little bit is just after this guy's DNA was submitted, they then decided to pull the dress and test it after the fact. I don't know.
It may not have been immediately afterward. There's not really any detail on that, but it may have been like maybe every once a year they were like, here, let's take this dress and let's retest it.
I mean, how much cum is left on that dress, you know? It's like,
well, they probably took a buccal swab.
I hope not from the corpse. That guy must have had some really high tea.
Yeah. Whatever that means. To be
shooting loads like that.
Mm. High what?
Testosterone.
Oh. Mm.
Yes.
Okay. So, Kevin was convicted of capital murder and then sentenced to life in prison, which essentially was about 40 years without parole. Prosecutors did not seek the death penalty simply because they wanted to be able to talk to him about the remaining unsolved murders from I-45. There are some young women who went missing and were never found, like Renee Richardson. She was a beautiful college student who went missing from a Galveston apartment complex.
Was she using a payphone?
I don't think so. Doesn't say, but I don't think so. As of 1999, her parents were still paying a private investigator to find her. Her mother, Kathy, told Texas Monthly, "All we know is that there was a terrible scream the night she disappeared. The police tell us that she is probably dead, murdered like the others. But that doesn't mean we will stop looking for her. We just want the chance to tell our daughter goodbye." Special Agent Don Clark, who's in charge of FBI's Houston office, said, "All of the victims were young, all of them were attractive, and we think all of them were sexually assaulted before they died." Law enforcement officials don't believe that all of the bodies found in the Texas killing field has been done by one person. It could be a mixture of transients, sex offenders out on parole from one of the many prisons in the area, etc. In 1997, one of the police departments ran a search of the number of registered sex offenders living between Houston and Galveston, and it contained over 2,100 names. Police have gone to extreme lengths to get these cases solved, including consulting with psychics. Some hid in trees at a cemetery.
That's fucking fantastic. Like, you know, cops are like, "Well, we're at a fucking loss. Call the psychic." Call Miss Cleo on this one, because we don't fucking know.
I mean, hey, you never know what could happen.
We should do an episode on, like, cops that use psychics to solve murders.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
It's fascinating, for sure. I don't know. We'd have to tie it into a spiritualism series or something. It'd have to be, like, a multi-part series on spiritualism for that to work. But it would be totally fucking fascinating.
I heard about a case the other day where this guy or this girl was murdered in Pennsylvania on like a trail, like a hiking trail. Mm-hmm. And this guy was like, "Yeah, like, I don't know. I just had a feeling that she was in the tunnel." And then he went and found her body in the tunnel. Like, he just had like a feeling.
Suspect.
Yeah, that is pretty sus. But he was like a
suspicious
previous detective or something like that.
I would definitely mark him as a suspect. Guess what, buddy? Thanks for the psychic tip. You're now suspect number one.
But yeah, he found her. So police gone to extreme lengths to get the cases solved. They consulted with psychics. Some hid in trees at a cemetery to see if someone showed up to the freshly dug gravesite of a murdered teenager, but no arrests have been made. It's time to introduce the final player in the suspect pool, Robert Abel. He's from a small town called Belleville that sits in between Houston and Austin. He married his high school sweetheart, Jane, and headed off to UT Austin to study aerospace engineering. In February of 1962, Robert took a job with NASA and then attended grad school after work. Robert became one of NASA's great young engineers.
Dude, people from NASA don't have a strong track record. Remember that crazy lady that drove, like, across country in a diaper to go kill, like, her boyfriend's wife or whatever? So the guy was married and she was obsessed with him, and I guess they had an affair, so she was like gonna go kill the wife.
Is that the same lady who like chopped off his wiener?
No, that's Lorena Bobbitt. That would be a fun like just bullshit episode to do one time.
Yeah, we should do it. So Robert was a part of the team that was crucial in designing the rocket that would actually put the Apollo astronauts into Earth's orbit. Robert Gottlieb, who's a veteran aerospace engineer, said, "If we had any hope of getting man to the moon, we had to get the maximum Saturn payload into orbit." And Robert Abel was part of the little band of very bright men who figured out how to do it.
At least he wasn't working on the Challenger.
Yeah, at least there's that. Flash forward to 1999, a detective named Pat Bittner suggests a sworn in a sworn affidavit that Robert Abel is a serial sexual offender who shows the kind of rage and violent behavior that's often seen in serial killers, and names him as the prime suspect in the four murders that happened between 1984 and 1991. How did he come to this conclusion? Robert owned the land that was next to the Texas killing fields, and his name pops up whenever there's a female body or a missing teenager or young woman in the area. Robert has lived in League City since 1983. Officers had executed searches on his home and questioned his friends and family, and even detectives from neighboring towns have questioned Robert. Investigators have flown over his land and ran cadaver dogs through his land to look for remains.
Why would he need to dump remains on his land when he's got the killing fields?
I was just thinking that. Right, like, in his why backyard. Would he do that? Investigators, wrong sentence. Stroking out over here. Highly respected criminal profiler Mark Young from the Houston FBI office has spoken with Robert, and agents from Quantico have analyzed his relationships with women. After his divorce from Jane in 1978, he started to spend his evenings trying to meet women at the bars and restaurants around Johnson Space Center in Clear Lake. In June of 1983, Robert moved into a middle-class neighborhood in League City, and Heidi and Laura Lynn lived less than a half a mile away, but he claimed to have never known them. He claimed that he enjoyed the availability of the nearby pasture land, and he leased about 1,000 acres at the edge of town, about 3 miles from his house, to cattle drive on the weekends when he was away from NASA. In 1990, he retired from NASA and bought the 11-acre property next to the killing field in order to open Stardust Trail Rides to give families the opportunity to be around horses like he was growing up.
Mm.
When the fourth body was discovered in the killing fields, Robert was very eager to help the police. He helped clear the brush in the area and let authorities use 14 of his horses and his backhoe for free.
What a nice guy.
Yeah.
Couldn't have an ulterior motive.
Loaned him the backhoe. An FBI agent who was at the scene that day said, "He was on me like a duck on a June bug."
That's the most Texas shit I've ever heard. "He's on me like a duck on a June bug."
A dick on a June bug. He even made suggestions about what we should be doing in our investigation. Interesting.
"You should swab for jizz right there."
"But not over here.
Don't do just, it over just right here. There. Just there."
So when Pat Bittner questioned Robert about if any bodies had turned up on his nearly 600-acre family ranch, Robert became furious and extremely defensive and refused to answer any more questions.
Red flag. Red flag on the plane.
It's like, so you ever have any of the bodies turn up on your 11 acres? Well,
I don't want to talk to you anymore.
I suggest you speak to my lawyer, but I don't have no goddamn cadaver horses.
In 1993, Pat caught a lucky break. One of Robert's ex-wives, Paula K. Myers, who had worked as a secretary at NASA, called him and told him that they had separated last year and that she was ready to talk. She told Pat that Robert had fits of rage and he would get so angry during their arguments that he would have to leave the house and not return for a week sometimes.
Just long enough to pick up a girl at a payphone.
And kill her. And hide the body. He never hit her, but she did see him beat his horses with pipes and chains until they obeyed his commands.
"God damn it, why don't you talk like Mr. Ed?"
She said that whenever livestock passed on the land, he would just leave them out in the open so the carcasses would be ravaged by coyotes and other scavengers. Paula also said that she had seen photos of nude women in his desk drawers at the house, and Robert had handguns and had carried one with him in the later part of 1991.
Okay, that might be a little bullshit. You're on an 11-acre ranch. There's coyotes, rattlesnakes, all sorts of shit. And plus, you're in Texas. You're kind of like born with a fucking firearm there.
Yeah, I feel like everybody probably had a gun there.
Like, you come
there.
Out the womb instead of a birth certificate, you get you a handgun.
Yeah, you get a concealed carry permit and a handgun. Like,
So she left the interview with Pat by telling him that he needed to speak with another one of Robert's ex-wives, Cindy Jacobs. They'd only been married for 41 days back in 1989 before she left him. So that's what he did. Cindy told him that she decided to leave Robert while they were on their honeymoon in Germany after they fought about sex. He told Cindy, "If you ever deny me sex again, I'll kill you."
Damn, that's...
He was horny as fuck.
Yeah. That's... Goddamn, man.
Jesus.
That's not how they stick... That's not how you get them to stick around.
No.
No. You don't fucking suck me. I'm gonna kill you.
So sexy. So...
It's kind of foreshadowing next week's topic.
Yeah. So Cindy also confirmed the photos of nude women in his desk drawers and aggression towards the horses that Paula had told Pat about before. Once he concluded his interview with Cindy, he consulted David Gomez, who specializes in serial sexual homicides, at the FBI's National Center for the Analysis of Violent Crimes in Quantico. David informed Pat that the murderer likely lived close to the comfort zone, being the killing field, and could very well have inserted himself into the investigation either to establish an alibi or to provide false leads. Authorities believe the latter about Robert, despite his claims of innocence. David goes on to say that the murderer is likely preoccupied with the media coverage of the crimes and possibly kept newspaper articles about them.
That's kind of like Gacy. He was hanging out at the cop bars and shit. And so, same thing with Ed Kemper. Like, they were both friends with the cops. That way they could, like, keep tabs on the investigations and shit.
That's crazy. So, he could also have some kind of trophy from the murders, such as clothing or jewelry. He provided Pat with a list of other possible characteristics of the killer that included a superior attitude, multiple sex partners. Friends of Robert said that he had unusual luck with the ladies.
Mm.
A history of cruelty to animals, usually described as a troublemaker, and will act out of anger. Pat believed that David could have been describing Robert. When Skip confronted Robert about him beating the horses when he and his ex-wives got into arguments, he said that he had never mistreated animals before. He said, "It's ridiculous to think that you can run a horseback riding business with horses that are scared of human beings."
Yeah, man. I don't beat my horses. I just imagine my fucking wife's head on the horse.
He denied
like a fucked up centaur.
He denied the allegations of him carrying a gun and that it was Paula who had the anger issues. He said he was scared to death of her at one point in their marriage and that he told police that.
That's why I had to buy the gun to protect myself from that crazy bitch.
He tried to explain away the thing with Cindy on their honeymoon in Germany. He said they fought about him not wanting to put her name on his checking account and didn't put her in his will. In 1997, the public was so convinced that he was the one behind the murders that when a pretty college student disappeared from a Bennigan's restaurant, about 200 people from the community stormed his property without permission to search for the girl.
Well, that's terrifying. That's some Frankenstein level shit or Edward yeah. Scissorhands.
This is when the infamous affidavit of Pat Bittner's is submitted to a judge for approval to search Robert Abel's home. The search went on for 12 hours. They vacuumed the carpets in hopes that they would find hairs from the victims. They seized three 22 caliber guns to potentially match them to Jane Doe, Audrey. And they took over 6,200 photos of the entire home and property. They took a gold tooth that they found on a dresser to test it to see if it came from the mouth of a victim. They clipped a piece of a curtain cord to see if it matched strangulation marks. They came up with nothing. Not a single thing came back as a match to any of the victims. The only thing that matched the profile that David Gomez had given Pat, the only thing that had gotten their search warrant approved, was that Robert had a collection of newspaper articles about the investigation into the League City murders and a Houston Chronicle story that detailed the life of a serial killer.
It's literally like the scene from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia when Charlie's trying to figure out who Pepe Sylvia is. He's got like all the newspaper, like all the mail, like clipped to a poster board and pinned to it with strings attached to each one.
I don't think I've seen that episode.
Oh my God, it's great.
He said that he kept the articles because he was interested in the investigation.
I'm trying to solve it myself.
When asked why he had the articles, he said that since the bodies were found on the land next to his, he had wondered if the police knew anything about the article and that he was going to send it to them. So this is something worth mentioning while we're talking about Robert. So the author of this article that we sourced in the Texas Monthly, Skip, interviewed Robert Abel. During one of the meetings with Robert, he brought this box of documents that were about himself, and at the bottom of the box, there was a small photo album with his name printed on the front of it. The contents of the photo album were photos of each of the places where the four bodies were found. Robert told Skip that something didn't sit right with him about the time of the murders. He said, I don't know if you know this, but I had torn rotator cuffs at the time some of those girls turned up dead. I couldn't have overpowered her and gotten her into my car.
Yeah, I got the torn rotator cuffs from throwing bitches in my car.
And if I did kill her, I couldn't have carried her out of my house. Skip felt that Robert was giving him a scenario of how one of the murders happened.
Called it torn rotator cuffs from fighting a victim.
When he asked Robert about the photo album, he was surprised that Skip was suspicious of the photos. Robert's response was, in case charges were ever brought against me, I wanted to know exactly what I was being accused of. So, there's
do
that.
Do what now?
Yeah.
Come again?
What?
Don't ask that man to come in anymore.
No more coming for Robert. Robert's friend, Robert Gottlieb, different Robert, told Skip, I think he was very interested in helping solve this problem of the murders. That's what he's good at, solving problems. And remember, he had a new trail rides business going. Of course he'd want the murders solved.
Yeah, now he can do a true crime horse trail.
Right.
Right. See, this is where body number 25 was found.
Real life haunted house.
Ooh, ah.
I wonder if he does a haunted trail.
And the crowd goes mild.
I wonder if he does a haunted trail during Halloween.
Oh my God. So Tim Miller, Laura Lynn's father, is so sure that he is the one who murdered his daughter that he has left some threatening voicemails on Robert's answering machine, demanding that he confess to the murders. He said, I wanted him to know that I would never forget what he had done, Tim told Texas Monthly. There are many days when I think about driving over there, putting a gun to his head, and pulling the trigger. When I'm near him, I feel like I'm in the presence of evil. One voicemail he left on Robert's machine was that he was going to kidnap him and take him to Las Vegas and bury him alive in a sand dune outside the city.
That actually fucking happens, by the way. When I was out there living there in 2014, we went out and hiked, and somebody dug like a 6-foot hole out on the hillside. It was fucking crazy.
What? Why?
The mob's still active.
Oh,
out there.
That's crazy.
So you go hiking near those old copper mines and shit and gold mines. Yeah, you might find see some shit you don't want to see.
I didn't know that. There's one instance that Robert claims to have never happened, that Tim rolled up to Robert's house and drug him out into the yard and put a gun to his head. And as Tim was about to pull the trigger, he realized that it wouldn't have mattered because there was nothing on his face. No fear, no emotion, nothing. He had no conscience. Tim thinks about his daughter's final moments every day. Was she on her knees begging for her life? And did she call out for her parents? There's just one problem with this theory. Not a single shred of physical evidence has ever been found to link him to the four murders in the field, any of the cases that they're investigating, and no witnesses can place him with any of the girls or women before they were found dead.
What I find crazy about that last scenario is Tim has admitted to assaulting a man, dragging him out into the front yard, and putting a gun to his head. Robert's like, that never fucking happened.
Yeah, like, what?
What the fuck? And this dude's like, yeah, I committed a fucking crime. Like, yeah. I totally did this.
Casually. It's important to note that Robert has never been arrested for any crime, nor does he have any kind of criminal record or even a complaint filed against him. Robert told Texas Monthly, "My life has been destroyed. My reputation is ruined. I didn't kill any of those girls. I wouldn't know how to kill." That's a good reason not to do it.
So,
I don't know how.
I don't even know how to kill nobody.
In 2018, Clyde wrote to the UK newspaper The Guardian that he didn't kill anyone. However, Galveston County's...
So we're jumping back to Clyde, who was like the third person we looked at. So we're kind of like catching back up with all the prime suspects at this point.
So Galveston County's ADA, Kevin Petroff, told Crime Scene, "Texas killing fields that made Clyde a jailhouse confession to raping and murdering Laura Lynn Miller and murdering Heidi Fye. But a conviction couldn't be secured without additional evidence." Clyde Hedrick is a free man, reportedly living in a halfway house in Houston. Police won't disclose his actual location. He was released on good behavior from Estelle Supermax Penitentiary in Huntsville in October of 2021. Tim Miller did win a wrongful death suit against Clyde for $24 million in liability and damages that he filed back in 2014. So how does that work?
Same thing that the Goldmans did with OJ. So, yeah, you could get away with murder in federal court, but then you could sue the suspected killer for a wrongful death suit.
And win that?
Yeah. Because it would be a different charge. You can't be tried for the same thing. Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't be tried for the same thing.
That's weird. I didn't know that. So, in reality, no one has been brought to justice for the murders of Heidi Fye, Laura Lynn Miller, Audrey Cook, and Donna Prudhomme. Tim Miller is determined to never give up on the search of who murdered his daughter.
And there you go, folks. That's the Texas Killing Fields Part 3.
And there's the sauce.
That's the sauce.
There is quite a few people involved in that field.
This is a spider web of murder. I mean,
I'm a little lost.
It's like a serial killer meetup. They're like, we have cookies.
Well, it's like they all took turns using it as a dumping ground.
All right, yeah. Who's got the field tonight?
Yeah. Did they like have a pager thing? Like,
yeah, schedule. I have it from the month of October to December. Oh, man, such and so was here, and here he dumped a body here. That's where I was going to put a body.
They're probably just all dumping in this at the same time.
One of them ever came across like another,
oh my
like,
god,
either like Heidi Fye or Laura's body, and we're like, "Damn it, my spot's been figured out."
Be like, "God damn it, man, I had my eye on her."
Oh yeah. My god!
No, I was thinking like the field.
I was just waiting for her to use the goddamn payphone.
What happens if the payphone doesn't work and it's like out of order and they get up to it and then the serial killer is like sitting there like watching it like, yes, this is my chance, and then they're like, oh, never mind, the phone doesn't work. And he's like, oh damn it, I gotta find a new spot.
And find a new corner.
He goes into the corner store and he's like, hey, by the way, your payphone doesn't work.
Like, they ought to just call this the payphone murders.
Yeah.
But, yeah, guys, that is the Texas Killing Fields.
Again.
So, for the last time, I hope we did it justice. We tried. So, yeah, next week, because we did get a full episode out of this, we will definitely be doing the Toy Box Killer, and it's going to be one long-ass episode. Let me tell you, get fucking ready. It is... Golden Tombstone territory, trigger warnings galore.
Hold on to your tits.
You
might get chopped off.
He might cut them off. I'll cut your goddamn tits off.
Hey, you bitch.
But yeah, if rape and sexual assault and bestiality is a turnoff for you,
BDSM.
I hope BDSM, that's a turnoff for everyone.
Then that is not the episode for you. But if you want to listen to one real sick motherfucker, then I suggest you listen to that episode.
Welcome because to the party.
He is probably one of the most twisted individuals we will ever come across.
Yup.
So, Christian, without further ado, do the thing that you do.
Do the doo-doo that you do.
Whoa. Wow. It's not been that type of day. Thank you guys so much for the like, follows, listens, downloads, everything. We appreciate you guys so, so much. We are getting closer to our second favorite type of the year. Oh my God, I just had
a Summer of Slaughter.
Summer of Slaughter.
I mean, we're pretty much full-born true crime now at this point. Yeah, I know. I think we have like a couple cryptids and urban legends that we're doing, but most of what's getting ready to happen is just all true crime.
It's all murder.
Pew.
Murder all the time. And if you like murder all the time, no, I'm just joking. But seriously, guys, make sure you just keep up the likes, the downloads, follow us on Instagram, Facebook. Share it with your friends. If you like what we, I'm sure everybody has that friend that likes true crime podcasts, yeah. True crime, anything on Netflix. So please make sure you guys are sharing those. And we just love you guys.
I made a TikTok.
Yes. Bailey finally made a TikTok. Fucking
TikTok. So,
go
watch that.
Add that.
Thanks for being social.
What's funny is Bailey shot this big fucking video giving a tour of the studio, and it was before I rearranged it. So
now it's completely different.
Yeah, so now it's completely different.
It's still a cool video, though.
It's still a cool video, so check it out. It's still a
good little insight into...
So check out our TikTok. But yeah, anyway, guys, stay creepy.
Stay spooky.
And stay strange.
Bye.